I call it the three stages of life. You're getting ready to go in the storm, you're in the storm, or you're coming out of the storm. And 80% of your career is in the storm. And all these parents are like, you know, when they come home after the storm for little Johnny that maybe didn't get to play in the power play or didn't get to score a goal, they're like, oh my God, I just can't believe the coach is so tough on you and you play with shitty players. My thing is I put my kid with shitty players all the time. I make my kid work for everything he has because that's the way life is. Life isn't fair. And unfortunately, we have it backwards. And everybody's like, well, you know, the only guarantee is that there's injury and you never know how long you're going to play in this game. And my advice to everybody is just make your kid grind it out. It's in that grind where you find out if he's going to be a hockey player.
That was former NHLer Darcy Hordichuk. And you are listening to the Up My Hockey podcast with Jason Podolin. Just watch me now.
Welcome to Up My Hockey with Jason Podolin, where we deconstruct the NHL journey, discuss what it takes to make it, and have a few laughs along the way. I'm your host, Jason Podolin, a 31st overall draft pick who played 41 NHL games, but thought he was destined for 1,000. Learn from my story and those of my guests. This is a hockey podcast about reaching your potential.
Hey, 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 welcome back to the Up My Hockey podcast with Jason Podolin. I am your host, Jason Podolin, and you're here for episode 134. And we have Darcy Hordichuk on the program. Darcy is a good old boy from Kamsack, Saskatchewan. Born in 1980, he was a WHL draft to the Calgary Hitmen and was a 19-year-old draft pick to the Atlanta Thrashers back in 2000, a six-rounder, 180th overall. And Darcy was a guy that liked to mix it up. You know, he brought energy to any lineup that he was in. He would fight anyone that was put in front of him. He would protect his teammates. And he was from the era of NHL enforcers. And that was how he earned his paycheck, and that's how he had his worth. And obviously, I mean, he was a guy that did more than fighting. He was definitely somebody that would play physical, get in on the forecheck, you know, do those types of things to make the other team's lives uncomfortable. But he ended up playing. He had a great story that he shares making the Atlanta Thrashers out of camp when he kind of wasn't supposed to. Didn't spend long in the AHL. He only had two or three years where he split games from the NHL to the AHL, and then had from 2002 to 2013 was in the NHL playing for Atlanta, played for Phoenix, played for the Panthers, played for the Nashville Predators, the Vancouver Canucks, and the Edmonton Oilers. So well traveled in his 542 NHL games, 1140 penalty minutes, and yeah, he is a successful realtor now down living in Phoenix. He is also the son of Braden Hordichuk, who just went first overall in the WHL US priority draft. So the WHL holds a separate draft for US born players. And they hold that the day before the regular WHL priority draft, and Braden was chosen number one to the Regina Pats, and we talk about that because I watch Braden play. Braden is a bit of a chip off the block from Darcy. Definitely plays a heavy game, likes to hit. You know, was not afraid to get into some altercations, and he also has some skill. But as we talked about in the podcast, Braden was around a point a game guy, a little bit under a point a game guy, and usually, you know, in those top selections, it's the point producers, the real high skill level guys are the guys that go in those positions. But I believe it speaks to, you know, one, the well-roundedness of Braden and how he can impact games in a lot of different ways. But I think it also speaks to the lack of availability of that type of player in this day and age, and why the Regina Pats were keen and eager to grab Braden with that spot. Someone that, you know, will go to the dirty areas and will play in straight lines when he needs to, and you know, will be a guy that stands up for teammates. I think that's pretty cool that he got recognized with the first overall selection. And like I said, could be assigned to other players out there that maybe these types of attributes are being placed higher value on. And I know that in our conversation, Darcy and I spoke at length about the value of being able to impact every shift. And if you're a goal scorer that doesn't have a puck in a shift, how did you impact it if that's the only thing that you do? So definitely some pages and some great advice in this episode. I love what Darcy had to say on a lot of levels, what it takes to be successful in anything, not just hockey, you know, how to parent your player in a way that's going to make him accessible, successful and accountable to their own journey. And being a low drama parent, you know, being somebody that isn't complaining and finding reasons with what's wrong all the time and allowing your player the space to figure it out, even potentially creating hard times for your player if you see fit. Darcy mentioned that he did that a few times in a coaching position with his son to allow him to figure out the storm and to deal with adversity. I think that is the gift that the game can provide as long as us parents allow our players to experience it. Much easier said than done, because I know we're passionate in the moment and we care, and we hate to see things not going well for our player or see our player suffer mentally or emotionally. But that is usually where the juice is, and that's usually where these young men become, or these young boys become, men. So without further ado, I will give you this conversation, because it was awesome. An hour with Darcy Hordichuk, like I said before, a 542-game NHLer with a son who is now pursuing the game. So the next generation has arrived. Same birth year as my oldest son, and just recently drafted the WHL. So lots of really good things to take away. So I will give you my conversation with Darcy Hordichuk. All right, here we are. Darcy Hordichuk, welcome to the Up My Hockey podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No problem, man. I think that we should probably start, just because why not, is Stanley Cup playoffs, and you played for the Canucks and you played for the Oilers. You got any skin in that game or that series?
Yeah, you know what? Deep down, I'm kind of cheering for the winner, but you know what? I was kind of originally pulling for the Oilers, but you know, I also played in Vancouver and have a lot of ties there, so at the end of that, I'll be cheering for whoever wins that series, and then that'll be my team. Is that a good political answer?
No, I love it. Yeah, I love it. Do you have any anyone there in any capacity from when you were there?
Yeah, Nugent Hopkins is still there, so we still keep in touch, and my kid got a chance to kind of skate with him this last summer, so he was so awesome to him, and kind of gave him some pointers, and so I remember Nuge as obviously a young kid coming up, and now all of a sudden he's the veteran giving all these young kids the advice. So that's great to see, but right, it's the circle of life.
Yeah, man, hockey's great for that. Yeah, they're a special team, hey? Like, I think they are. At least we'll see if they can get it done. But I really believe they got the pieces there this year to make a big deep run.
Well, what a ballsy move throwing the backup and then hasn't played a lot, you know, Picard. And for him to pull that off with that much pressure, that's not easy to do. I know that obviously Edmonton played probably better defensively than they ever have. And, you know, throwing the third string and seems to be working for both the Canucks now and the Oilers, which is pretty impressive.
I know, man. That's such a weird wrinkle in that series that you got Sheloff's in there and now Picard, and both doing amazingly well. There's a lot of talk about the play time in the last couple of games with Draisaitl, McDavid, and oh my God, and Hyman. And anyways, what's your thoughts on that? Like being a third, fourth line guy in your career, you know, and knowing that they're is value in that role, especially in the playoffs. Do you think that they should be given some of their other guys a few more minutes?
Well, you know, I think to go far in the series, obviously you don't want to wear those guys out, but they seem like they're workhorses, and they're basically having the discussion with the coaching staff to say, hey, we can handle this much time. We can't, you know, my analogy is when I talked to Barry Trotz when I was having my career year, and I just said, hey, Barry, you know, I'm getting, you know, 6, 7, 8 minutes a game. I feel like I can get a little bit more ice time, you know? And he goes, well, it's funny that you said that, because Paul Kariya said the same thing, and so did Matt Sundin. So one guy's going to get the ice time, Darcy, and it's probably not going to be you. So as much as you feel bad for those, you know, fourth line players or the third line players, do they deserve the ice time? Of course. But are people going to get fired? Is, you know, guys going to get shifted around in the offseason like Toronto if they don't win? Yes. So you only have one kick at the can right now, and the pressure's on for them to win. And, you know, maybe it's one of those things where you're up by 2-3 goals in a game. Those guys get to play a lot more. But yeah, talk about earning their money. You definitely see Draisaitl and McDavid. And, you know, to say that they're not producing and they're not playing well and they don't deserve the ice time is one thing, but they have been. So you got to give them. You got to give him props and got to give him the opportunity to.
Yeah, keep going. I could just imagine as being like the guy behind the bench. Cause I think, like, for me, philosophically, like, hockey is such an amazing sport because of the idea that you do need everybody. I think, you know, and then you have the two best players in the world on your bench and you look down, like, how can you not really put them out? So like, there's that aspect, especially when it's a close game, close series, you know, you feel like, you know, you're almost an idiot not to. So like, to stick to your guns, at least for me, if I was behind that bench and be like, you know, like, I need to get these guys on the ice. I might get the better version of McDavid and Draisaitl, and I'm going to have these guys more involved. Like, it's such a fine line there. And I can totally understand why they end up playing 29 minutes. But I do think it is in the best interest of the group and the team in the long run to try and get some other guys out there a little bit more.
100%. And you know what? It's funny to see. And if you watch in between warmups, you see Perry has one foot on the ice, like he wants to go out there. And then all of a sudden Draisaitl and McDavid are going out there. So here's a guy that basically wants the Stanley Cup championships. Here's a guy that knows he can play in those minutes and he's not getting the chance, you know, which it's gotta be tough for a guy like that, you know, to accept this new role. And, you know, even Evander Kane, right, who's a big part of it, he's not getting as much ice time. So there's a lot of different guys not getting the ice time, which, you know, in the end, everybody has an ego and everybody has family coming to the games and everybody. But, you know, all of a sudden, if they, you know, pull off that victory like they did yesterday, whatever they're doing is working. So you can't go against it.
With just want your take, too. I know that the 2024 NHL is different than, you know, when you were probably last playing. But the cross-check to McDavid, Soucy gets the game. Is that going to see any type of, you think, retribution in this series? Or is that something that maybe waits till next year? Or is that something that just sort of goes away completely?
I think just in this game of hockey, that just kind of goes away. Obviously, there's going to be a couple guys chirping and trying to bump them. But it's just, it's one of these series where, you know, you try to do something about it, you're in the penalty box, and all of a sudden now, you know, it's a short, it's a power play goal. So, you know, I obviously don't think that, you know, they meant that for that to happen. You could see the big Russian kind of cross-checking from behind. I think he meant to hit him in the chest. But that's more reason for Edmonton to go and get somebody that can step in those situations for next year or this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I like McDavid's response to it too. Actually, I got a lot of respect for him. Like, some people think that he's like complaining and why. I don't think he is at all. Like, for how much he's out there and for how much he takes, like, I just think he goes about his business. He understands it's hockey and off he goes. But yeah, those guys get a lot of attention. It's pretty fun to watch. But let's shift gears. Let's shift gears to you, a native of Kamsack, Saskatchewan, one of the good old boys. You know, there's been a lot said about the actual per capita induction from players from Saskatchewan into the NHL. It's pretty wild. Talk about your upbringing maybe just a little bit and how, you know, what hockey was, what how that served to be a part of your life growing up.
Yeah, you know what? I grew up in a small town called Kamsack, you know, 1,500 people. But I think like the mind is such a powerful thing, right? And I was fortunate enough to have a coach by the name of Jim Wright, and his son was Tyler Wright, who was drafted first round to the Edmonton Oilers, and basically seen his path and followed him playing for the Broncos. And his younger brother played on my team, so we had always practiced together and kind of got to go and travel on some of the road trips and see Tyler play. And you know, you don't realize how tough it is to get in the NHL until you're actually on that path. And you know, like we talked about our kids going in the Bantam draft, it's just a number, right? You know, me and you both, all of a sudden you look where we got drafted and it wasn't within the first top eight rounds. So you realize how much effort's put into it, but it all starts with the belief system. And mine was training with Tyler Wright at the age of, you know, 16 years old, where he'd come back and we'd all train together at, you know, this school gym, because his dad was a gym teacher. and he'd be doing 35s and here I am doing 45s. And, you know, because of that, I'm like, geez, I'm stronger than this guy. And if he was drafted in the first round, I could play in the NHL. And then we had box and I kind of hit him with a couple good hooks where I almost dropped him. And I'm like, holy crap, I just beat up a former first rounder. So it was kind of cool, you know, that whole path of having the rights in her family. But my parents, you know, obviously growing up in a small town, my dad was an x-ray tech. My mom was a nurse. Grew up with a sister that was 4 years older than me. And like every kid in a small town, you just grew up with road hockey and having two rinks that you can just show up. And that's how you kind of killed your time. And it was kind of one of the greatest childhoods you can kind of grow up with. And yeah, my journey just kind of took me to getting drafted to the Calgary Hitmen. And then I wanted to be a police officer. That was kind of what you did in a small town. That was your outlet to maybe go into the big city. But it wasn't until later in my career, all of a sudden, where I'm like, holy crap, I might have a chance to play in the NHL. 'Cause I kept fighting every heavyweight, you know, the Goddards, the Todd Fedoriks, the Steven Peets, everybody that was drafted the year before me. So my motivation behind playing in the NHL, everybody's like, how do you do it? And I said, well, just, do what my parents did and put your kid on a farm and he can make $10 an hour shoveling grain in bins, you know, when it's, 35 above and chopping wood for a living. And you realize real fast that, you'll do whatever it takes to get to the NHL or to get to the next level in whatever sport you're doing. So working on the farm and growing up in a small town, you know, that, it's kind of the school of hard knocks, and that's kind of my background. And before you know it, I'm fighting Probert in the NHL as a 20-year-old, getting called up for one game. And now I'm fighting guys like Chara and Proby, because as you know, you get one crack or one kick at the can, and you better do whatever it takes to make an impact. And that's what I tell my kid every day he's on the ice. I said, listen, if you're not scoring goals, you're like a stock. You better block shots. You better hit everything that moves. You got to get noticed, because, you know, the people, the scouts, there's a million other kids out there. And if you think you're going to get by just as a one-dimensional player, there's 200,000 kids that aren't even going to school nowadays that are going to these academies and working just as hard. So kudos to, you know, our boys. They got drafted this year, and it's going to be a fun journey, but yeah, it's only the beginning, and they're going to get a taste of what hard work's all about. So,
you know it. I mentioned you, it's crazy you mentioned some of those names. Like Tyler Wright lives in the same town as me, and was a guest on the pod and was a great guest. You know, he was recently let go by Edmonton, but was their head of amateur scouting there for a long time, and had a really great perspective on, you know, what they look for and what he looks for in players. And then you mentioned Eric Goddard, who was my next door neighbor here up at Predator Ridge, and one of the toughest men around. And it's a small world, the hockey world, and it's that's one of the things I love about it. The idea, though, you mentioning the belief, which I think is such a key component, is like that idea that it can happen. You know, and you had it right in front of you in Kamsack, a town of 1500, that a kid was, you know, in the first round of the NHL, that was, you know, going to play and did play in the NHL. And then all around you, scattered throughout that province, there are examples of, you know, players going. What can you expand on that a little bit more? Like how much that actually means? It is one of the things that I talk about with the players that I work with, like the belief system. Like your belief system has to tell you that it's possible, you know, that you're willing to do the work for it to happen, you know. And I think without that, I think a lot of guys get left behind, and they maybe even don't even know that belief system is potentially what held them back.
Well, and that's the thing people don't realize, but the mind's a powerful thing. You know, if you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, you can't. And, you know, everybody after my career, like, I wonder what Darcy's going to do. You know what I mean? This guy's just a hockey guy. He's a fighter. You know what I mean? In my last 3 years, I probably made more than I did in my NHL career. Cause my mindset is whatever people tell me I can't do, whatever circle I need to get into, I'm going to get into it. It's a challenge for me. It's a game. You know what I mean? And that's the way I live my life, is just, sometimes it drives my wife nuts. She's like, you know what? Why don't you just wait in line like everybody else? Or why don't you just be normal? And I'm like, but I'm not normal. And I don't care. You know, it's not about money. It's not about thinking you're better than anybody else. It's just that it's the way I'm wired. I want to challenge myself, you know? And, so for all these parents out there that are putting their kids in these tournaments and are trying to live through their kids, my advice is make it hard on them. Right from day one, when my kid and I was coaching, I sat him on the bench as much as I can, because the rest of his career, he gets to sit on the bench. That's just the way it is. You're going to have, I call it the three stages of life. You're getting ready to go in the storm, you're in the storm, or you're coming out of the storm. And 80% of your career is in the storm. And all these parents are like, you know, when they come home after the storm for little Johnny that maybe didn't get to play on the power play or didn't get to score a goal, they're like, oh my God, I just can't believe the coach is so tough on you and you play with shitty players. My thing is, I put my kid with shitty players all the time. I make my kid work for everything he has, because that's the way life is. Life isn't fair. And unfortunately, we have it backwards. And everybody's like, well, you know, the only guarantee is that there's injury and you never know how long you're going to play in this game. And my advice to everybody is just make your kid grind it out. It's in that grind where you find out if he's going to be a hockey player.
Yeah, I love all that. It is too easy. It's one of the things that I don't really like about the academy environment too, which is a little bit of a segue, is that everything's tailored for them, right? And my kid obviously played at Rink last year, so man, I have him in there. I think thankfully he's coming in from an environment where he knows the work required and what he has to do. But when everything is just kind of handed, right, and here's what's next, and here's what's next, and here's what's next, I think it takes the ownership and the accountability out of the player to be a player, you know, because it's like, what do I do when somebody's not telling me what to do? And I think, as you and I both know, I think that's where the magic really happens, is what are they prepared to do when no one's watching?
100%. That's exactly what the journey's about. Like my kid, I've made him start a company at 15 years old. I'm like, you want me to pay for $300 sticks all the time? Like, dude, like, you want to take 20 minute showers? Here's the reality of it. Not everybody makes the NHL. Not everybody makes college. Not everybody does this. So start figuring out, you know, how to work and what to do. And, you know, I'm proud of my kid. He started a company called Window Wizards, and he washes windows in the neighborhood, and now he's making $450 a pop. And now I can't get him to go, you know, ref hockey games no more, because he's like, Dad, I only make $30 in 2 hours. But he's starting to get the business sense. So, you know, it's not just hockey in the Hordichuk household. It's kind of like, hey, listen, if you don't work hard in hockey, this is what you get to look forward to. You get to wash windows in Arizona when it's 110 outside. So you got to create this kind of false, not reality. It's not really false. It's just the way it is. That's life.
Yeah, no, for sure. That belief system. I have some of my clients read an article from, I'm going to blank on his name now. Nathan Gerby. So Nathan Gerby wrote an article in the Players Tribune. And for those of you, everyone out there who doesn't know, he was 5'4", played in the NHL, shortest position player to ever play in the NHL. And one of the comments that he makes, and it's just kind of in passing, it says that his belief was that his size would not dictate his future. Right. As a smaller player, like, can you imagine being 5'4" and actually playing in the NHL? Right. Like, everyone in the world would have told him that he's not big enough, that he's not tall enough. Right. But he and his belief system told him that wasn't going to be a reason that would stop him. And then so he did the immense amount of work required, you know, and was courageous enough and all these other things to allow himself to get to the greatest league in the world. And I just think that's such an awesome example of that, right? Because if he had this big of an inkling that, you know, it wouldn't work out for him, then why would he do the things that he did, right? He had to have the pretense that it didn't matter and he could overcome it.
Exactly. And I think one thing that helped me out in my career was called affirmations. And I don't know much about, you know, mental toughness or this, but I will tell you that after, you know, watching videos and reading books on Tony Robbins and just how positive and how the mind works and how powerful it is, you know, I started to get into positive affirmations. And before I'd fall asleep when I was 14 years old, I would just kind of fall asleep to my voice speaking, saying, hey, listen, Horty, you're one of the toughest guys in the ice. You'll fight anybody, anywhere, anytime. You know, you skate like the wind. You're a horse. You know, nobody beats you in the corners with pucks. And if you hear it over and over and over again, then guess what? All of a sudden you start to kind of believe it. And now that's what I'm trying to, you know, install with my kid. And he reminds me every day. He's like, yeah, Dad, you know, you tell me this and you tell me this, but you only had 20 goals and 560 games in the NHL. And I go, Braden, it's not about goals, buddy. You're missing the point. It's about what it takes to get along the way. And by the way, when I was in your level, you know, at 14 U hockey, I probably had an extra 100 points. I didn't start fighting when I was 14 years old. I started fighting when I was 18 years old. You know what I mean? So it's kind of funny here arguing with my 14, 15 year old, and you know, the stats don't lie, I guess, but he's starting to believe it now. And I think it's fun to see these kids be able to kind of go through their own journey and how their mind works.
Just take a short break from the interview with Darcy Hordachuk to say thank you to all the Up My Hockey people out there in whatever capacity you are involved with Up My Hockey. Of course, if you're listening to this right now, you are a listener of the podcast, which is amazing. This is the free resource program that allows you to gain some insight, I think, and some lessons on hockey that hopefully you can apply, whether you're a parent to your kids or if you're a hockey player yourself, that you can apply to your own journey and use some of these pieces, these nuggets, that is designed to give you the best advantage possible in the pursuit of your goals and dreams. But Up My Hockey is also a lot more than that. I mean, it is mindset training, as you know from the website. I do programs with players and teams, either individually or collectively, and that is a big piece of Up My Hockey. So thank you to everyone who's been involved in an Up My Hockey program or who is currently a client and who has walk down that mindset and personal development path with me. It's been amazing to work with so many over the past years. I believe there's over 500 graduates of the Peak Potential Hockey Project now. There's been dozens of teams that have taken the program with me. Academies and minor hockey associations are starting to work with Up My Hockey, and I just couldn't be more grateful that one, you believe in Up My Hockey and in me and are willing to invest, but also that we have been able to make such a difference in the lives of so many players out there, that they are finding their voice and they are finding their confidence and they are taking their potential to real levels and exploring what that is so they can become the best player that they can be. So that's super exciting as well. But there's also a lot of stuff that goes on the ground here locally in the Vernon area where, there's people that are supporting the Up My Hockey program. So we just finished my spring season with my 2011 AAA group. We had a fantastic year. It was really a representation of the best kids from the North Okanagan. That means like Lake Country all the way up to Revelstoke. Tried out for the team, and we put together this team that ended up winning 3 championships in 3 attempts, and we just had a great time together. The kids came together really well, and for all of those people who either tried out for the team, who made the team, and wanted to be involved, I say thank you. I say thank you to my assistant coaches this year, Garth Gartner, a local Vernon hockey product, along with Tyler Queering, who was on the bench with me, another local product here that played junior and pro hockey, that we just had a great time and were able to give back to the kids. And Up My Hockey has kind of become this thing, that people want to be around, and I really, really appreciate those that do. I think that we are attracting some amazing people to whatever program you might be involved in, whether it's my skating sessions or my summer programs or the spring programs or the mindset programs or the podcast. It just fills me up, and I want to take a second to say thanks, because I think if as the leader, I guess, of this company, I'll call myself as the captain, you try and have a line and a philosophy and an integrity about what it is you want to do and how you want to do it. And I think the more I can stay true to that, the more honest I am and authentic I am with the message, the more people with like-minded philosophies come and participate. And I hear sometimes people complaining about, the drama that's involved in hockey or with a team or with this or with that. Like, I can honestly say, like, there is Up My Hockey is so dramaless. And I'm super thankful for that. I just think that, the people that are here for the right reasons. I know that I'm here for the right reasons. And I know with honesty and transparency, there's nothing that can't be overcome and good things happen. So thank you to the sponsors as well. There's some local sponsors that are involved. Nick Routon with Century 21 Realty now has been a great supporter of Up My Hockey and the UMH 68 in particular, my invitational event here in BC. Iron Ghost Construction is a major sponsor of the UMH 68 and has also supported my local team here as well. FH&P Lawyers, a local lawyer company or group of lawyers, supported my compete, the 2011 spring program. Nature's Fair, a local grocer, wants to get behind UMH 68, and there's others that I'm sure that I'm forgetting about. Brown Social House here locally called me and wanted to be involved. So there's so many opportunities to connect, to network, that the people want to get behind youth sports and youth hockey in general and the Up My Hockey brand. And again, I'm just so thankful for all of you in whatever capacity you participate with Up My Hockey that you're willing to now recognize my voice or come say hi at arenas and say thanks for the podcast or the DMs or the reviews. Or even just, like I said, the participation and willing to invest your money in an Up My Hockey program is a huge, is a decision that you make. And I know there's other decisions out there. So thank you for trusting Up My Hockey and looking to it, whether it be for your on the ground skill development, your spring programs, your summer programs, or advice with the mindset and otherwise. So thanks again. I will get us back to the conversation with Darcy Hordichuk. You told me a good story just briefly when we met there at the John Reed about making the NHL and like your NHL draft and how like you went into camp and essentially earned a spot. Like maybe walk me through that and the listeners a little bit, because that's a tall task, especially from being, I think you were a sixth rounder, so probably somebody that maybe wasn't expected to make it as young as you did. And like, what was your mindset going into that camp?
Yeah. So it's funny. I believe that it was actually me and Mickey DuPont. We didn't actually get drafted as an original draft as 18-year-olds. So we got passed upon and then we went the next year as 19-year-olds. I think there was only three of us drafted as 19-year-olds. And I went, I think, eighth round, 188th overall. And I think it was because of a guy named Brad McCrimmon, who was my coach, and basically called Atlanta and said, hey, listen, just take this kid. You know, he's got the heart of a lion. He'll fight anybody. He'll do what it takes. And as they call it, you know, he's a good locker room guy. But so basically I knew that coming to camp, when you see whatever it was on my jersey, 65, where they had me ranked. So, again, in camp, you probably have 4 or 5 days to make a statement. So I just kind of wanted to see who their toughest guys were. And Danny Lambert was their tough guy at the time. And, you know, as a young guy coming to camp, you don't want to disrespect these guys. So as Danny Lambert, in between periods, walked into the bathroom, I followed him in there and kind of stood next to him in the urinal. And as we're both pissing, I said, hey, Mr. Lambert, do you mind if we, you know, fight? And he looks at me, he goes, hey, I appreciate you asking. He goes, yeah, let's go. I'll set it up. So when we go back on the ice, they quickly shuffle me around because Danny, you know, gave me the opportunity to fight him in camp. And after that, you know, there was no looking back. And I basically got a, you know, chance to make the team after that and get called up, knowing that I can hang in there with their heavyweight or their tough guy at the time. So it was pretty cool that he did that for me.
Yeah, I mean, and that's awesome that you recognize that too, because, you know, he doesn't necessarily have to do that in that scenario, right? He's been in the NHL. He knows that he's going to be on that team, and yet he's given a young guy an opportunity to potentially beat him up, you know, like, you know, that's the way it seems like that's the code amongst your ilk back in that day, correct?
Zero benefit. He had zero benefit for fighting me. The only thing that could go wrong is exactly what did go wrong, was fighting me doing well and now getting myself to, you know, a chance to kind of show the coaching staff, holy crap, this guy can hang in there with these guys. He's not just, you know, this or this. So I feel like he helped make my career, and I owe a lot of respect to Danny Lambert.
You mentioned locker room guy and kind of put your hands up for air quotes. That's one thing that I think it's talked about a little bit, but I don't think that the players, like, you know, like maybe your son or my son, like fully understand like the impact that has in making a team or even sticking around for a team or having more opportunities. Because I think that is like one of the biggest gifts you can bring to a locker room, and being a guy that makes people better around them, being a positive influence, you know, being levity in the room, whatever, an example, is really, really important, I think. And if I was picking a team, that would be something that if there's any type of midline decision of like A or B player and it's close, and that one guy I think is going to be like a better uplifter, better making people better example for the organization, like instantly, like I think I would be taking that player, because I also think he's going to get better faster. Can you speak to that a little bit? Like what value you place on that?
100%. That's what it's all about. At the end of the day, it's about having a guy in your locker room that isn't selfish, having a guy in the locker room. You know, I heard this story from one of our scouts, you know, and he said, I didn't expect to be staying at, you know, a hotel where the whole team was staying at. But, you know, when you're in those situations, you just kind of see the 12 guys having, you know, breakfast in the morning. And he goes, all the guys took off. Some guys put their plates away when they're done eating. And he goes, but there's one guy after that ended up cleaning up after all the guys. And he goes, I found out who that guy was. And when nobody was around and nobody was looking, those are the guys that I want. I want to see how those guys, you know, are as people. And he goes, I ended up drafting that guy in the late rounds. And so it's just interesting. Everybody's always watching. Everybody's always listening. You know, my kid obviously went in this bantam draft, but it's fun to hear after the fact how many calls in our little circle of the Shane Doans that got called and saying, hey, what's this guy's character? What's his parents like? You know what I mean? And people don't understand that. Like, you only get one crack at this. And, you know, the parents affect the kids as much as, you know, in the draft or in their careers, because there's just too many people to pick from. So, you know, as a scout or as a GM, it's easy just to make an excuse and say, I don't want that kid because guess what? There's drama that follows him, or his parents want him to play more. Listen, when you have my kid on your team, and I'm sure it's the same thing with you, your kid on the team, there's zero drama. It's his own path. And if he needs to sit, then you sit him. If he needs to be disciplined, you discipline, because this is the way life is. There's no fair opportunities. And people don't, I don't think, realize sometimes is that, you know, I look back in my AAA career when I played with Chris Kunitz and some of these guys, I was a fourth line grinder, dude. I didn't even play half the time. I sat in the bench and they just used me strictly to go out and just run guys. But it was in that time where I'm like, okay, I got to work more in my hands. I got to work more on my game. I got to be a better skater. So it sucks to go through those storms, and it sucks to go through those grinds. But sometimes, you know, you have to look in the mirror and say, what can I do better to get me more ice time? Or what can I do better? Because, you know, most parents are like, oh my God, you're in such a, you know, you're not getting treated fair by the coach and it's politics. No, it's you. Every coach wants to play the best players. Every coach wants to win. So maybe you're just the problem. Maybe you're doing something wrong. And I found out that back then I probably was the problem. I wasn't as good of a skater. And, you know, maybe I was trying to score more goals than I was better than. And Chris Kunitz got, you know, got that chance. And rightfully so, you know, playing alongside Sidney Crosby 15 years later or 10 years later. So,
yeah, no, I mean, you mentioned the storms. And one of the things that I say is, you know, it's you can't be preparing for the storm while you're in the storm.
Exactly.
You know, and they're going to come, as you said, especially if you have any type of a path with hockey at all. I mean, it's going to happen at the junior level. It's probably already happened at the AAA level. And when we insulate our kids as parents, right, and protect them from those storms, we're actually doing them the biggest disservice imaginable, because they need to navigate that storm and they need to be prepared for it. And that's one of the things. I don't know how it sounds like you've raised Braden to be able to manage the storm the best that he can, and to give him the tools, because I think the players are way less equipped mentally to handle these things just because it's been like this kind of this golden pathway. Do you see that with where you're at with the players that are around?
It's everywhere. Exactly. You nailed it. And it's the accountability. And what you have to realize is that these people are humans too. If I'm coaching your kid, I'm looking for a kid that is tough. I'm looking for a kid that wants to throw his body around. But now the next coach doesn't want any of that. So, you know, here I'm in my journey for 15 years and I'm like a chameleon. I'm one coach as a Pete DeBoer that is telling me never to fight and I need to, you know, go to the net. And then the next coach is a Mike Keenan, where it's like, dude, anybody that looks at you wrong, anybody that touches our players, send the message. You know what I mean? And not per se fighting, but just let them know you're out there. So, in order for you to have success, it's you have to be a chameleon and you have to adapt to all these personalities and you have to understand that everybody might see something different in you. Everybody might think you're a different person than what you think you are. And half of the journey is trying to be able to adapt and to recognize what you need to do different. And my biggest thing to the coaches is just like, listen, I want to help the team win. What are your expectations of me? What do you want? You know, and I remember Vancouver, I had a pretty good reputation, and you know, Mike Gillis and those guys are like, Horty, listen, everybody knows that you'll fight. You need to stop fighting. Like, you just like take a chill pill. And I kind of looked at him and I remember saying, Mike, I'm not fighting basically for the Canucks. I'm fighting for the next job that I'm going to need down the road, you know, because every scout's coming to the games and be like, why isn't Hordachuk fight no more? Why doesn't he play tough? So every game I played the same, you know, and everybody knew when they got me what they're getting from me. I didn't ever think, you know, I was somebody that was going to put the puck in the net. And Brad May gave me this analogy. He goes, Darcy, if you put a grasshopper in a jar and it jumps 100 times and you take the lid off it, the grasshopper will still only jump to where that lid was. And we kind of get labeled in our careers, you know, as a fighter, or you kind of get labeled and that's all they want you because that's your piece of the puzzle. But that's kind of where I'm like trying to teach these, you know, new kids is that, listen, if you can kill penalties, if you can, you know, be on the power play, take it serious, not just in practice, but in games, and just work on all this stuff, because you don't want to be that grasshopper where, you know, even though you know you're better than you are, you get labeled as this person and that's all that you can do. So, you know, while you're young, here's your chance to learn and not be a grasshopper.
I love it. Yeah. The you mentioned the ability to impact games, and I think that's such a great message for the younger, well, actually for anyone. I mean, pros listening to this, sometimes we get caught up in the idea of the label, as you say, right? Like, I'm a goal scorer, I need to score goals. Well, I mean, even Austin Matthews didn't score in a hell of a lot of games this year. You mean, like, he's got to be able to impact games other ways. And I think that message translates really well to the youth guys, because, you know, as good as some of these players are, I mean, your son included, going first overall in the U.S., you know, priority draft, a lot of these guys, if they do get to be paid to play hockey, are going to have to change their game or understand who they are at some point. I mean, there's only so many first line right wings in the NHL, for instance, right? So yeah, how do you impact a hockey game? How when you are on the ice, do you get noticed? It's the thing I talk about all the time. And like, compete level is one of those things. I mean, having good sticks, I mean, your second, third efforts, like there's so many ways that you can, that you can get attention without having that second assist or potentially, you know what I mean, having to score a goal. You know, not every shift are you going to be able to score a goal. Not every shift are you going to be able to impact the game. You might not even touch the puck that shift, right? But I do think that there is ways that players can get noticed on the daily or more often than somebody else just by the way they approach the game.
Yeah, no, if parents can listen to one thing, this is my advice to them. It's funny, after talking to the Regina Pats, we didn't really know anybody in the organization. We didn't know he was going to go to Regina. We thought he might go to, you know, a couple other teams that were right after that, you know. But they said one thing that kind of stuck out, and they said, listen, all these kids want to be on the half wall. Everybody wants to score the goals in the half wall, but there's only so many guys that could play in the half wall. We need guys that can go in front of the net and just do damage, like muck it up, go in the corners and, you know, fight for the puck. We want some grinders. We want some guys that want to get dirty. And I think, you know, as parents, we're kind of getting a little soft on our kids and we're getting all caught up in how many points. If this was about points, then Braden should have probably been, you know, maybe the 10th overall or the 20th overall, because there's a lot of kids that had an extra 70 points. But what you realize is that all those toe drags and all these fun goals that kids are scoring out there, those don't work in the WHL. They don't work at the next level. What works is if you watch a guy like Connor Bedard in juniors and he's protecting the puck, he's, you know, doing the Mohawk down the side of the walls. It's those kind of NHL quality plays that get you the next level. So it's about doing it right. It's not about, you know, always trying to toe drag. It's like taking pucks to the net. Like, so many kids come wide and they just shoot it. Well, it's a 3% chance you're going to really score on that. And the problem is that our level and, you know, 14, 15 new hockey, a lot of kids score from there, but the next level that doesn't work. So what do scouts look for? They look for guys that want to drive the net. They want to fall and crash the goalie. They want to blow shit up. And it's hard because kids don't want to do that. Kids just want to be able to snipe. They want to be able to not get hit. So, you know, the kids that do this are the kids that are going to get noticed real fast. And everybody says, well, how do you get noticed? You just freaking work hard. You muck it up. You do what everybody else isn't doing, because 90% of the kids out there don't want to muck it up and don't want to get dirty.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that piece translates, right? Like, to whatever level you want to play at. And to your point, I think that might even be an indication. Like, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up, because Braden was roughly a point a game guy, maybe even a little under a point a game guy this year. And for him to go first overall in the priority draft, I think it speaks to what a unicorn that type of player is now.
you know, a player that does have skill to score, but also has the ability and the want and the desire to hit, get hit, go to the dirty areas, play a game that's going to translate, because less and less players I find want to do that.
Exactly. And like, what do you want to do? You want to, you know, get, finish the season with 110 points and be the top team, or do you want to go far in playoffs? The Toronto, we're going to, you know, look at the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're in it. They're the, you know, a perfect example of a team that has, you know, five guys in that top line that don't quite muck it up. Like, if I'm picking a team, I'm taking DeBrusk, I'm taking Tkachuk, I'm taking Hyman, I'm taking the guys that have that little edge, not that guys that get me past, you know, obviously it's great to have a great regular season, but I want guys in the end that have that edge to them. And I think as parents, you know, it's tough because kids don't want to go in the corner. Kids don't want to get hit. Kids don't want to hit. It's a lot of work to run around and hit guys, you know, and obviously the game's changing, but it's really not changing because a lot of us old guys that played the game still love guys that have that edge. Yeah. And even though it's gone away, it really hasn't. And you see a guy, you know, with the Rangers or Vesey, like it's pretty cool that, or Rempe, sorry, that, yeah, that still has that edge, and he's going to buy himself a job in the NHL just from trying to send the message every game and being a good locker room guy.
Yeah, no, I love it. I mean, I love that aspect. I think that that's, you know, bringing the compete level, I think is, well, in our house, that's just the two things that are non-negotiable. It's just like, you have to work your ass off and you have to compete your ass off. I mean, other than that, I don't care how the game goes. I don't care how you, if you missed your goal or missed the guy back door, whatever the case may be. That'll take care of itself, and we can work on those things in practice. But I can't make you work hard, but I will demand it, right? I mean, that's the one thing that I definitely want my boys to do. And I think, you know, when you have that type of a mindset and that approach, I think that's gonna get you some places. And it's why, to your point, like why these guys make these phone calls. And I think that they should make more phone calls. Like the more I've been around the game and the interviews, like that is the separator, like especially at this 14, 15 year old level, because there's guys that can just naturally skate better. There are guys that just naturally can shoot the puck hard. Those guys haven't been tested yet. I mean, they haven't, like, where is their resolve? What is their mindset like? What is their mental toughness? Like, how hard are they going to push when everyone is the same size and strength as them, you know? And I think that's the indicator. Like, these guys that are willing to do the work, that want to be hockey players and not just play hockey, I think, like, that's who the guys I'd be invested in and drafting.
Yeah, totally. And you know what, it's one thing to get drafted right now, but you want to find out who's actually putting the time in and who's working hard. Like Braden's skating from 2 months ago is not even near the where it is now. Like, he's so far ahead of the game, you know, working with Aaron Konecki and Lars and some of these great skills, you know, skating coaches, because that's what he wants to do. So it's so much more when you talk to people and say, hey, listen, you know, you might be seeing this from this player, but guess what? He's passionate. He's going to be a player. He wants to put the time in. And, you know, like, my whole thing is exactly what you said in our household. I don't care about points. Those things will come. You know what I mean? It's just the law of averages. You don't score for a week or 2 weeks, it's going to come in, you know, you're going to score all of a sudden 3-1 game. It's how hard do you forecheck and then how hard do you backcheck? Because you can control that, your effort and your backcheck. And if you just do a couple of these little things, you just stand out. If you're a scout, that's what you're looking for. You're looking like, man, does that guy back check hard? Like, man, is he working? So it's great to see, you know, obviously we have the edge as hockey parents and as dads kind of going through this, but there's just so much misinformation. Everybody wants to go to the CCM tournaments and everybody wants to go just work with a skating coach instead of traveling and spending that $3,000-$4,000. If your kid is serious about it, work with a stick handling coach, work with a skating coach, because those are things that, you know, will get you further in the end than to say, hey, my kid's one of the top 68 players in the country. It doesn't matter. Next year, he'll be one of the bottom 68 if you don't put the time in with his skating and skills. So,
yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. With the draft, so maybe we should chat about that. So one, maybe we should chat about why you're in Phoenix. I mean, I know you did have a stop there, but that was earlier in your career. You, I mean, you're from Saskatchewan. Why Phoenix? And how has that environment been for your boy and his hockey?
Yeah, you know what? I ended up in Phoenix because obviously I played here back in 01, 02, and then met my wife, Lisa. We dated for 5 years long distance and then got married in Nashville. And then had a house in Nashville up in Franklin. So we're kind of thinking about maybe going to Franklin. And then just decided, you know what, her parents live in Prescott. Her sister moved from California here, and just thought we'd give Arizona a chance because it's, you know, obviously she traveled around for 13 years, followed me around. And then I just said, hey, where would you want to live? And she said, why don't we just, you know, start with Arizona. So we'd still go to Nashville once in a while. We had our house. We just recently sold that a few years ago. Great spot to be from. A little bit too quiet for us. And then, you know, just being close to Saskatchewan, you know, it's a 2.5 hour flight from here to Saskatoon, a quick WestJet flight. So it's kind of a win-win. And, you know, for those of you who haven't been to Arizona, it's one of the greatest places that you can live for 8 months of the year. You know, have one of the best places. And, like I always tell everybody, you can't shovel sunshine. So that's why I'm not back home right now.
And then as far as the Phoenix Junior Coyotes, and that organization and hockey kind of down in the States, how much different is it, if at all, and what is that environment like in youth hockey down there?
Yeah, it's crazy, right? I think, you know, having players like Austin Matthews coming from here, Nyes, obviously, Doan's boy, it's been blowing up, and it's you can't even get ice time here. So we just actually started our own little skills hockey center right next to the ice den. It's 7,000 square feet. We have a skating treadmill on it. We have a rapid shot. We have huge ice surfaces for shooting lanes. It's all synthetic ice, but it's packed all the time. We're not even technically open right now, but everybody is passionate about the game. And we went to Red Deer. We did really well in that tournament. Everybody was kind of like surprised, like they didn't even know there's hockey in Arizona. But people forget that we produced the best player in the NHL to this day, and he came from Arizona. So anywhere there's good coaching and anywhere you have ice, you're going to get good players. And there's a ton of alumni guys. You got Ray Whitney here, you got Doan, you got Sullivan, you got Sillinger, you got, you know, Taylor Pyatt, half the NHL. Kobasu lives down here. It's a great place to live, and they're all kind of helping out. You know, Michael Grabner, his group of kids is I think 2010s. Like, he treats this team like an NHL team. Like, you're gonna see probably his whole team get drafted. Like, they have a regiment that I think is tougher than when I played in the NHL, and it's pretty cool, you know what I mean, to see. But Arizona's definitely going to be on the map. It's sad to see us, you know, lose the Coyotes, but at the end of the day, we had so many people from all over the place. They all kind of have their teams that they cheer for and love the game of hockey.
And so how does that work for Braden, and maybe even for you as a hockey dad? So obviously the WHL has geographic rights over that area for as far as the draft is concerned. Is the USHL an option there as well? Were your sights always set in the WHL because you were from there? Like, how does that work as far as the landscape of youth hockey and making that next step?
Well, if you go in my kid's dress bedroom, actually has a Michigan jersey. It's hanging over top of his bed because he went to Michigan to watch Kent Johnson, a good family friend, and Owen Powers and Brissant and Luke Hughes play, and was just absolutely set on, you know, going the college route. And you talk to everybody and you kind of just, you know, hear what people have to say. And then all of a sudden, you know, Braden started to develop into this player that had this edge to him. And then you realize, okay, let's just play it by ear and see what path you go. Until you're drafted, until something happens, you just don't know what opportunity is going to present itself. So next thing you know, we realize that he's kind of a better fit for the WHL. He's one of these physical kids. He, you know, hit puberty a little bit earlier. He's 5'10", 165. So then you kind of say, okay, let's, you know, start talking to teams. And everybody's like, man, this kid's built for the dub, you know. And obviously me playing there, I think it turns boys into men playing in the WHL. It's a great league. So that's how we just kind of switched gears last minute. And, you know, in fact, we're going to a Madison Capitals camp next week that we signed up to prior to the WHL. But no, we're happy to say that the contract is about to get signed with the Regina Pats. So he is committing to, you know, being a Regina Pat, and that's the path that we're going to go. And he's excited about it. We're excited about it. My parents live in Kamsack, so that's a 3-hour drive. We didn't know we were going to get drafted to the Regina, so we had a plan 3 years ago for Costa Rica. So Braden's going to be in Regina and my parents are going to hang out with him for a few days and take him to camp. And I'm going to be in Costa Rica checking in on him to see how he's doing at Pats camp. But it's exciting for all these boys, and congrats to your boy too. I know he was drafted, and it just gives them a little bit more direction on what they want to do. And it gives them a little bit more leverage too, if they want to go that USHL route, because they know that, you know, that other teams have showed interest in them, and they, these kids get to pick the path that is best for them. So.
Just going to take one more short break here to remind you of the mindset programs that are available to athletes and programs, associations, academies out there. This is a tailor-made, done-for-you, plug-and-play mindset and personal development option. This is the biggest game changer. As you've heard in this podcast specifically, how Darcy Hordichuk speaks about the personal development side of the sport and what the sport can teach if we allow it to teach our athletes. Now, we can do this by chance and hope it happens, or we can actually take a structured, tailored, created specifically for the age group intended to help your player be the best person and athlete that they can be. How to handle adversity, how to gain confidence, how to thrive in adversity and even look forward to it, how to be a better teammate, and how to lift others up around you. These concepts can be taught. I have taught them. I have seen breakthroughs. When delivered to an individual, it can have a massive amount of impact. When delivered to a team, it can rise all boats. It's fantastic what type of a culture builder this is. And talk about eliminating problems. Think about the problems that happen within a team or an organization. Generally, the problems happen around some form of perceived adversity. When the player stops seeing this adversity as something that they need to avoid and something that is unfair, and they see the adversity as something that they should overcome and that they relish, the drama seems to go away in a hurry. People are always pushing. They're always trying to get better. They're always trying to find ways through and around, finding solutions to things instead of problems within things. So not only does this help your players as an individual, help them get better, help them understand themselves, the ability of self-awareness, the ability for them to find and chase their goals and dreams, to align their thoughts, words, and actions. But as a team, as a culture setting, this is a huge differentiator. Your practices become more intense. Deliberate practice becomes something, a concept that people understand. Competitiveness is now thrived upon and something that is looked forward to. People push each other. There's so many benefits from having your player either do this individually or for a program or association to adopt this type of training for their teams. It takes immense amount of pressure off the coach. It allows them to focus on the hockey-specific stuff and the practice creation and all the other things that have to happen to make a season run smoothly. Yet you are investing in the people of your program, specifically the people. Helps them be better hockey players, but it's also creating better people. So if this is something that you would like to adopt in your association, if you're a decision maker somewhere, maybe has the ear of a decision maker and you want to suggest that Up My Hockey is something that is looked at, by all means, upmyhockey.com is where you can get a hold of me. That is the direction that I want Up My Hockey to go, is to be a personal development service tool and mindset tool, high performance tool for competitive players within organizations. So as the player grows with the program, they grow through the Up My Hockey programming. I believe this is helping you. It's a very competitive market out there now, and the more you can offer players and parents, and if mindset development and training from an NHL player is something that somebody will sign up with your program to do, and it will increase their player experience while they are inside the program, this is something that I believe should be invested in. It's also right along with my philosophy that I think hockey players should be the best people and contributors of the community going. If you're somebody that played competitive hockey, I think that should be a standard, that this is a person, man or woman, that you want to be involved in your business in some capacity, or you want to be friends with, because you know that what they've been taught and what they stand for are principles that are aligned with what you want. And that's really one of the things that I find really, really important, is that the athletes I work with become great men and great women. So that's it for the mindset training. Again, if you want to reach out, www.upmyhockey.com, Jason@upmyhockey.com is to reach me directly. And yeah, I look forward to the conversations. Now back to the conversation with Darcy Hordichuk.
What was that like for your boy? I know, again, just with the exposure and the maybe the knowledge of the draft. You mean like playing up here in Western Canada, yeah, and playing for Rink Academy and in the CSSHL, like, you know, essentially every weekend these guys played, it's not unobvious that there's lots of scouts there, right? And these yeah. guys want to play in the WHL. So it's like this little, you know, it's this little laboratory of kind of stressors for these kids at, you know, 14, because they want to get noticed. They know there's people in the crowd. They know there's obviously a lot of good hockey players out there. And there was a lot of ups and downs, I know, for my boy throughout the season and a lot of his teammates as well. Was there that level of scrutiny or exposure or acknowledgement that that he was under a microscope all the time?
None. Zero. Until we went to Red Deer and we seen 200 scouts there, and you know, we all of a sudden beat Sherwood Park 7-2, you know what I mean? And then we beat Red Deer 4-2, and we started beating all these teams. I mean, I didn't realize how big it is. I actually pulled my kid halfway through the tournament because we had a 90th anniversary or a 50th anniversary for both my in-laws and their grandparents, and we could only play 3 games in Red Deer, and then we had to miss the last 2 games, and everybody's like, where the hell did Hordichuk's kid go, you know? So I didn't realize that there's going to be 250 scouts at this. Like, we're not used to seeing that. You know, yeah. You come to our games down here, and you'll see, you know, 4 or 5 scouts, maybe here and there. We have a Thanksgiving tournament where a lot of them will fly in, but to see what's going on in Canada, you know, the John Reed tournament and then the Red Deer, I was just like, I didn't even know there's that many scouts existed, which is kind of cool. You know what I mean? And it put a lot of our kids, you know, on the radar, and that's how 3 of them actually got drafted. But, you know, I think we're doing the same amount of work, if not more, than some of the Canadian kids, because our kids are on the ice 5 times a week. And then after that, we have, you know, the skating coaches and the skills coaches and kids training. So, it's a pretty dedicated group of kids, and every weekend to play the best tournaments. We're traveling to, you know, play the Ducks, to play the Kings, to play in Chicago. I mean, 12 times a year we're traveling to Minnesota. We're traveling to these big markets that have the best teams to play against. So do we get to play, you know, against Kelowna and Red Deer and everybody in your backyard? No, not really. But you know, we have the same mindset down here, is that no matter who you play, here's what we expect from you as players. And in order for you to have success, this is what you have to do.
Is there the one thing, I mean, geez, not that I can, we can complain up here about the expense of the sport too. It seems to me like down in the States, it's even a bigger thing, because more or less because of the travel, like you said, like you can't necessarily play locally because all the local kids are probably on that one team, you know? So then you have to leave your local market all the time. Is it a barrier to entry? Do you think for some of these families to be involved in it at a high level?
100%. Yeah, it's an expensive sport. I mean, you know, and I don't look at it so much as these road trips as hockey. To me, it's just, I get to hang out with my son. I get to hang out with the team. And this is what's going to hopefully in the long run, keep him out of trouble. You know what I mean? Yeah. And whether he makes it to the next level, it's these road trips that we get to go hang out for 4 or 5 days together, go in the car, you know, and half these kids now are so taught to focus on the game. Like, we're in Minnesota. I'm like, boys, we're going to Mall of America. And they're like, Dad, we play at 7:00. I'm like, it's 2:00. We're going to go have some fun. You know what I mean? And I think I'm the biggest kid out there. I'm like, boys, relax. I play in the NHL. I know what it takes. These kids are trying to get their nap in. They've got these boots, the compression boots. And I'm like, listen, I've never done the compression boots once in my life. Like, let's enjoy these road trips. We came this far. So yeah, I mean, every one of these trips is a couple grand. And then, you know, you got your, you know, $10,000 to play hockey in Arizona. And then you got the travel, and you got, it's a quick $25,000 to $30,000 a year commitment. And a lot of people, I don't know how half these parents afford it, but somehow they do. And it's unfortunate, but that's why we've kind of started a skill center, so that it doesn't matter, you know, how much money you have. It's kind of a way to kind of get into the sport and test it and feel it and see what, if you like it. And, you know, I mean, you look around the league, it's not just guys in AAA getting drafted. There's kids all over the, you know, playing AA. If you're a workhorse and you're a hard worker, and half these kids that haven't even got drafted are gonna make it. So it's just, what are you doing in your off time? And if you like something and you're passionate about it, doesn't matter what you do in life, you're gonna have success.
I love it. Yeah, what's your advice to players? I mean, and I guess that was maybe like the last half of the conversation with the draft. You know, your boy went first overall. Mine went 98th, you know, end of the first round, or 89th or something. Lots of players didn't get drafted, you know, and there's lots of really good players that didn't get drafted, and there's only so many spots in the WHL, let's say. What's your message to anyone, whether they went first round or they didn't get drafted, in regards to the draft?
It's all smoke and mirrors. Nobody can tell me, you know, at 15 years old, how good you're going to be. It's the start of it. It gives you direction. It gives you hope. It gives you excitement. The guys that didn't get drafted, when they go to camp, they got to work that much more harder. The kids that did get drafted, they basically just maybe get a couple extra lives. And I always think of a guy like Derek Dorsett, and I think of all these guys that couldn't even make AAA, that couldn't, you know what I mean, let alone getting drafted and having a hell of a career. There's a million Derek Dorsetts out there. So my advice is never get complacent. And if this is something you want to do, it's going to be one of the best career paths you ever do. It's going to be the most fun you ever have. And it's not even about making it to the NHL. You know, it's about, you get to go to Switzerland. You get to go play in Germany. Hockey just introduces you to so many circles of different people and different lifestyles and different opportunities. It's about the journey, you know? So it's, yeah, it's definitely a start in the right direction. It's not the end all be all, but the cool thing is, if you're willing to get better every day and that's your mindset, no matter what happens, you're going to have success.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it changes anything. One thing I say to the players is either you're proving them wrong or you're proving them right the next day. You know, like you just get back to work, you know?
Exactly. And now I told Brayden, I go, dude, like, here's the cool thing. Now you have a target on your back. Like, guys are going to play you harder. Guys are going to be like, look at this kid. You know what I mean? They're going to be coming after you, and you just got to prove them wrong. You got to show that the Regina Pats made the right decision. And, you know, Brayden is that personality. He doesn't care about any of this stuff. He doesn't care if he got drafted, if he didn't get drafted. He's on a mission right now where he loves the game. And, you know, since he got drafted, he's training even harder. And I'm like, dude, you got to pull back. You're going to burn yourself out. Like, you got to, and you know, there's so many other things that we get to kind of do. Let's go golf. Let's go do pickleball. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? I'm not one of these parents that push. I'm the opposite. I don't want, you know, this to be the only thing that he's focused on, because there's so much more in life. But it's trying to have that balance with my wife. Yeah. And I have a baseball player. I have a younger kid that's 11 years old. And, you know, we have all these battles all the time in the backyard. And who's the better hockey player? Who's the better baseball player? You know, who what's a tougher sport? And so far, my baseball player's winning. He's got two broken bones from an orbital fracture from taking a pitch off his baseball bat. And my kid still hasn't broke anything. So, yeah, Brayden. So on paper, it looks like baseball's a rougher sport, but we'll leave that up to the critics.
Yeah, I think we're lucky. I mean, maybe that's an interesting discussion, because I have three boys. So my oldest is the one that just got drafted. So he's my 09. I have a 2010 and a 2012 as well. And they all play. Hudson's always been a grinder, you know, he's been, you know, I wrote a little post the other day, you know, in first year Adam, he barely made the Vernon Adams C team, you know, like, he's just been that guy. And, kind of had a few discussions along the way when he was young, just telling him, you know, it's not the fastest guy that gets the puck. It's the guy that wants it the most, buddy. Right. Like, that's who gets it. And that was like a big eye opener for him. And he's just always been that guy that wants the puck more than somebody else. And he's kind of, you know, continually passed players. And now he was, I think, the 11th forward drafted in BC from being like the 18th best forward in Vernon, you know? Yep. And so in saying that, like, my other younger two have had a great example. So I think, you know, of what happens in the background, you know, and how to get better. And so they're all workers. So why I'm telling that story is because I am like you saying, hey, let's go play some tennis. Let's go hit some golf balls. Let's go throw the football around. And they're game to do it, but they're just so focused, hyper-focused on hockey. I think we can kind of maybe take it a little bit for granted, you and I, because I think there's a lot of parents out there where their kids aren't the ones who are in the garage before school shooting pucks, and they're doing this, and you almost feel like you need to lead them a little bit. I think that's a bit of a danger zone. I go, what are your thoughts on that? Like, if the roles were a little bit reversed, you thought Brayden had this potential that maybe he wasn't seeing it in himself and he wasn't putting in the work. How would you manipulate that scenario, if at all?
Well, I let them know right off the bat, I'm not spending $2,000-$3,000 on a road trip for you to go out there and not know what you want to do. If you show me you're putting in time, if you want to get better, you wake me up in the morning. If not, there's a million other sports you can play. This is not my dream. This is your dream. And maybe let's find something that you're passionate about. You know what I mean? So that's what parents have to understand, is that, you know, part of it is now he got to skate with Connor Bedard in the summer, and he got to go and play with, you know, Nugent Hopkins and Barzell 3-on-3. So he's been around these players and now he's hooked. You know what I mean? So that's part of the journey, is that everybody kind of has these different paths and they want it for different reasons. But if they're not into it, then it's okay. You know, what people have to realize is that playing in the NHL isn't the end all be all. In fact, it's a little bit of the opposite of what you think. You look at all the guys that have made it, and now that they're done playing, they don't know what to do. They don't know how to relate to society. It's like, imagine you get to fly in private jets. You have the best food in the world. You get to see the best things in the world. And just overnight, you know, you get the rug yanked from underneath you. And now you have to relate to being just an average person. And it's tough. A lot of people can't come to society and feel normal when they've had this incredible journey. So it's a double-edged sword. So I don't, you know, I think I always tell people, be careful what you wish for. It is awesome. It's the greatest journey, but it's these life lessons that we have to teach through the game. You know what I mean? It's the road trips. This is the way I look at it, is that I only get my kid for so long in my house. So on these road trips, it just brings me close to him. It's not even about hockey. It could be about baseball. It could be about soccer. It's that time in the car. What do I get to teach them? Knowing that I got to send them to the real world, what do I do? Like, my wife just timed my kid's shower this morning, and my kid was in the shower for 30 minutes. And 11 of the minutes out of the 30, basically, he let the water run. And she's just like, how do we send you off to a billet? You just wasted 30 minutes of water. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's these stupid little things that maybe my parents didn't teach me, but we're trying to get him to be a young man. And it's not the point about water. It's not the point about money, but he lost his phone today. And now if he's in the shower for longer than 5 minutes, it's going to cost him, you know, $5 a minute for after that. So it's continuing to try to mold these kids and break these kids. And this is what hockey's been able to do for our family. Baseball, my other kid plays baseball. He doesn't play hockey. So I don't want parents to get caught up in all this bull crap about Johnny being a good player. Stop living through your kids, dude. Like, you know, as great as it was playing in the NHL, I do real estate now, and I'm doing just as good, if not better. And I don't have the stress of, am I dragging my family down to the minors? Am I taking them here? Am I having to fight this guy? You know, it's great to make it, but it's also great to be away from the game and get to enjoy family.
Yeah, I mean, those are great points. I think if we can, again, like the principles that I kind of talked about earlier, just like what are the foundational principles of why you're involved in the sport? And I think if you can really grab onto those ideas, like the ability of being selfless, you know, ability of being a team guy, of understanding your own journey and the accountability you need to have to it, right? Like the sacrifices that need to be made, all those things. If you can take those things, I don't give a shit where any of my kids end up when it comes to hockey, but they've been given the gift of understanding of how to be the best that they can be, right? And that in an environment that is not an individual sport, right? Being the best you can be in a team sport is much, much different, because it's not just you that this is about, right? So I love hockey for that. I love hockey for all those reasons. And I think that the kids that really get behind those principles are the ones that do the best in the sport. You know what I mean? Surprise, surprise, right? Yep. And not having the results of the sport be the focus, right? The focus should be on the person that is involved in the sport, in my opinion. And then you just get the best of the both worlds, because whatever happens with hockey is one thing, but I know they're going to be good community members, right? They're going to be people that are productive and hopefully, you know, society is going to appreciate them. So I don't know, that's kind of my thoughts on the whole thing. And then we sort of use hockey for the purpose that it should be used for.
You nailed it. I love that. That's a great analogy. And that's exactly what we believe in our household too.
It's awesome. Well, we said we go for an hour. We're at 56 minutes. So let's just, maybe that's a wrap. I really appreciate you sharing the wisdom. There's lots of good pieces there for everyone here. Obviously wish your boy Braden all the best. And it sounds like maybe our kids might be crossing paths again one day. We did happen to play in the John Reed there, which was fun, and I'm sure it'll happen again. So anyways, thanks. Continued success to you and to the boy, and appreciate you being here.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. Obviously, this is all about the kids and helping parents understand the journey. And hopefully we shared a little bit of perspective and this will pay off and they can implement some of this for their kids.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks again, man. And yeah, best of luck on the journey. All right. Thank you so much for being here. Darcy, thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing the wisdom of your own journey and also the journey now as a parent, trying to support a young player to follow in your footsteps, and also the advice you've given to anyone out there who wants to follow in your footsteps. I think the advice that we chatted about was invaluable. I mean, the ability to be a locker room guy, the ability to control some of the controllables like effort and your back check and your forecheck, the ability to be able to take charge of your own journey and develop the passion around it required to keep pushing, to keep pushing. We talked a lot about the draft or extensively about the draft in this episode, and I do think that that's a big thing. And whether it's a junior draft, and you're in the States and you're waiting for the USSHL draft, or you're waiting for the NCDC draft, or you're a Canadian player that wants the WHL, OHL, or QMJHL, or you're already in junior, you're waiting for the NHL draft. Like, all these draft moments are just snapshots. Just a reminder, just a fraction of a moment in time on a particular day where a group of individuals has projected you to be something in the future. Whether that be as an 18 or 19-year-old in a junior league, or whether that means as a 24, 25-year-old pro. And guess what? These guys get it wrong a lot of the time. So whether you were a first-rounder, whether you were a third-rounder, whether you were a no-rounder, I don't want any of you to get caught up in that idea. All it is a projection. And what it means to you is that you got to work your ass off the following day to either prove people wrong or to prove people right. And that is the long and short of it. Either you have more people to catch or you have more people to keep off your back. So I don't think it should affect what you are doing. If you want to be a hockey player and not just play hockey, that's just part of the game. And you need to do what is required of you to continue to get better and to find what your potential is. Now, some aren't willing to do the work. Some people want it to be easy. Some people aren't willing to think about the depth chart and be able to climb and jump people in front of them and to gain that spot. And that's fine. That's fine. If you're fine with having excuses and having regret, if you want to go to bat and if you want to be the best player that you can be, the draft is only a little piece of the puzzle and the rest is on you. So stay accountable to what it is that you want. Control the controllables you can control, right? We talk about them a lot in my program, right? Your effort, your competitiveness, your gratitude, your time management, your emotional control. These things are all things you can control. And if you do a great job controlling those, you will pass people. You will get noticed. You will find a place somewhere. It often has a lot less to do with the actual hockey and more with your perception and your ability to get better away from the rink. So best of luck to everybody out there. Whatever draft you may be, this message may be attributed to. Congratulations on getting drafted, congratulations on getting recognized. If you didn't get drafted, there are a million stories out there of people who have made it to the next levels without getting drafted. And just make sure you're doing what it takes to make your dreams come true. Until next time, play hard and keep your head up.